Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, February 14th, 2022. Coming up this hour,
stocks slide as geopolitical risks over Ukraine ripple through global markets.
We take you to Europe and Asia for the latest market moves.
The Fed takes a measured tone, with one official saying rate hikes should be data dependent.
And the latest reasons why white-collar workers do not want to return to the office full-time.
New York subway ridership is rebounding after a drop from Omicron, plus a vital crossing between the U.S. and Canada has reopened. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshaw in sports. Super Bowl 56 in L.A. The Rams with a fourth quarter touchdown drive. They beat the Bengals 23-20.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119. And around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
And good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Interactive Brokers Global Analyst. It helps you find new global investment opportunities to diversify your portfolio and discover undervalued companies that may have greater growth potential. Try IBKR Global Analyst today at IBKR.com/GA.
And global stocks are tumbling this morning. 6:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 35 points. Dow futures down 238. And NASDAQ futures down 146. And the 10-year Treasury up 5/32, the yield 1.91%. Nathan.
Well, Karen, these dramatic moves in markets come as tensions build between Russia and Ukraine. Moscow's military buildup near the border means this could be a decisive week in the conflict. Amy Morris has the latest from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
Vladimir Putin says the U.S. has failed to meet his demands. The U.S. warns an invasion is imminent. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan told CBS's Face the Nation there's a possibility there will be a major military action very soon.
They could launch a military action essentially at any time. They could do so this coming week. But of course, it still awaits the go order.
Sullivan says Putin could move before the Winter Olympics end February 20th. President Biden spoke with Putin for a little more than an hour on Saturday with no real progress. Russia repeatedly denies any intention of invading Ukraine. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Amy, thank you. Reaction pouring into the potential conflict over Ukraine. Ariel Cooper, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, says an invasion looks imminent.
We do not give Putin what he wants. I think he will invade Ukraine. He has an excuse. His demands are impossible to fulfill, such as rolling back NATO to the lines of 1997. And I think he deliberately demanded such harsh demands in order to have a pretext, a casus belli, to invade Ukraine.
That is Ariel Cohen with the Atlantic Council, who says Russia has denied plans to attack. The White House is threatening sweeping sanctions in response to any incursion.
Well, the tensions over Ukraine, Karen, have stocks selling off this morning. Overnight, equities in Asia slid for a second session. Let's get the recap from Bloomberg's Juliet Sally in Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. The MSCI Asia Pacific Index fell over 1%. Japanese stocks among the worst performers as they played catch up following a 3-day weekend. The Nikkei 225 was down by 2.3% in Tokyo. China's CSI 300 and the equity market in Hong Kong, which is also facing a COVID outbreak, traded in the red. Energy stocks, though, bucked the trend across the region, climbing as oil added to an 8-week winning run. And the Bank of Japan intervened in the bond market to put a cap on 10-year yields, which had risen to a 6-year high by offering to buy an unlimited amount of 5 to 10 year. In Singapore, Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Juliet, thank you. Stocks in Europe this morning are under even more pressure. We go to live to London and get the latest with Bloomberg's Max Ramsey. Good morning, Max.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. Yes, we're seeing real reverberations across European assets amid this tense geopolitical situation. The mood in Europe very much risk off. We fall 2.6% on the Stock 600, the FTSE 100 here in the UK, the best performer among the major European indices, but still down 1.9%. The DAX in Germany down 3.1% and the CAC 40 leading losses down 3.3%. So catching up with the losses we saw in the US on Friday in the equity markets, bonds also following Friday's US action. We see a bid for European sovereigns, the yield on the German 10-year Bund falling 8 basis points, 0.219% there, and the 10-year gilt yield falling 5 basis points, 1.5%, the yield on the 10-year gilt. Live in London, Max Ramsey, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Okay, Max, thanks. We're also seeing geopolitical tensions have an impact on energy markets. At one point this morning, crude rallied more than 1% at its highest level in 8 years. Right now, both NYMEX and Brent crude are up 0.2%. West Texas Intermediate's at $93.27 a barrel. Brent is at $94.64.
Well, Nathan, Ukraine tensions are dealing another blow to markets that are already skittish about inflation and interest rates. Forecasts call for as many as 7 rate hikes from the Fed this year. San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly says the central bank needs to be measured in its approach.
What I would favor is moving in March and then watching, measuring, being very careful about what we see ahead of us, and then taking the next interest rate increase when it seems the best place to do that. And that could be in the next meeting or it could be a meeting away.
And San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly made the comments on Face the Nation from CBS. And you can hear the program every Sunday right here on Bloomberg Radio.
Oh, Karen, as COVID cases ease across the country, back to the office plans are coming back. But it turns out a growing number of white collar workers do not want to return to their desks full time. Let's get the details live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. Just 3% of white collar workers want to return to the office 5 days a week. That's according to a poll by management consultancy Advanced Workplace Associates, which warns employees will quit if companies force them back full time. 86% of the 10,000 employees polled globally want to work from home at least 2 days a week. People from all age groups at a broad range of industries felt the same way. And Advanced Workplace Associates Managing Director Andrew Mawson says bosses who are not sensitive to their employees' needs will suffer accordingly. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thanks. Right now, S&P futures are down 39 points. Dow futures down 265. NASDAQ futures are lower by 161 points. The DAX in Germany is down 3.1%. The CAC in Paris lower by 3.3%. 10-year Treasury is up 5/32. The yield 1.91%. COMEX gold up 0.75%, up $13.60 at $1,855.70 an ounce. And right now, Bitcoin is trading at about $42,200. Straight ahead, we'll have your latest local headlines, plus a check of Super Bowl 56. This is Bloomberg. At 6:07 on Wall Street, we're at 17 degrees in Central Park. Heads up if you're headed to JFK Airport. There's an accident, the southbound Van Wyck at Liberty Avenue. Michael Barr is here with what else is going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Transit officials in New York are hoping a recent uptick in subway ridership is a sign that the city is bouncing back from the Omicron surge. The MTA reported subway ridership topped 3 million for 3 days in a row last week. It was the first time that had happened since the Omicron wave hit New York in mid-December. Weekday ridership regularly topped 5.5 million before COVID-19. A vital commerce crossing between Detroit and Windsor, Ontario has reopened. A truck blockade had closed the Ambassador Bridge for about a week. Windsor Police Chief Pamela Mizuno says about a dozen people were arrested.
Any unlawful activity in the area will not be tolerated, and officers will take the necessary action to keep the peace and traffic flowing. There will be criminal consequences for those who interfere with or interrupt traffic flow.
Chief Mizuno also says they seized 5 vehicles and towed 7 more. Protesters were demonstrating over vaccine rules. Albuquerque police say they have arrested a man suspected of stabbing 11 people in the city. The apparent random incidents were reported at multiple locations. Police say the suspect rode a bike and was armed with a large knife. Senator Lindsey Graham says that he is moving forward from the January 6th Capitol riot and the 2020 elections. Graham is instead focusing on the 2022 midterms.
I am not contesting the 2020 election. I'd like to reform the system. The problems we found in 2020 need to be addressed, but the 2020 election is over for me.
Senator Graham also says that he believes President Trump stands a great chance of being elected in 2024, provided he avoids talking about the 2020 elections. Graham spoke on ABC's This Week, which can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg. Many on social media say the Super Bowl halftime show was a huge success. The show on NBC had Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg kicking it off. And then Mary J. Blige was there with a surprise performance from 50 Cent and Slim Shady himself, Eminem.
Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Remember when Sugar Hill Gang was old school? Thanks, Michael. Coming up to 6:10 on Wall Street, let's talk about the game now. Here's John Stanchana.
Thanks, Nathan. The Rams had a lot to overcome in the Super Bowl. Early injury to the wideout Odell Beckham. He had scored the game's first touchdown. They had that dropped hold on an extra point. That would prove to be a factor. And the blown call. The officials didn't see an offensive face mask on Cincinnati's 75-yard touchdown that gave them the lead early third quarter. But after both teams were not doing much offensively, there were seven straight possessions that ended in punts. The Rams went on a long drive, 79 yards. This was the 15th play.
Stafford from under center, steps back, throws the fade, back shoulder. Cooper Kupp's got it! Cooper Kupp brings it in! Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, L.A.!
That's Rams Radio. That was Kupp's second touchdown. The Rams sacked Joe Burrow seven times, nearly an eighth on a fourth and one incompletion. That gave the Rams the win, 23-20, with Kupp the MVP. And the second championship in franchise history, but the other one was when they played in St. Louis. So Tampa Bay last year, L.A. this season, 2 years in a row, Super Bowl winning teams playing in their home stadiums. Devils lost to Pittsburgh 3-2. St. John's lost to UConn 63-60. The Red Storm just 1-4 while playing at the Garden. 20th win of the year for Iona at the Olympics. U.S. won gold and silver in the new event, women's singles bobsled. They call it mono bob. The gold to Callie Humphreys, who used to compete for Canada, and the silver to 37-year-old mom Elena Myers Taylor. The 15-year-old Russian figure skating phenom Camilla Valieva will be allowed to compete despite a recent failed drug test. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
Okay, John, thanks. S&P futures now down 37 points. Dow futures down 249. NASDAQ futures are lower by 157 points. The 10-year Treasury is up 3/32. The yield, 1.92%, with geopolitical risk at the fore. We'll get the latest on the tensions over Ukraine next with University College London's Julie Norman. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, sunny, breezy, highs only in the upper 20s today. We'll get into the mid-30s tomorrow. Increasing clouds Wednesday with a high close to 50. Right now, 17 degrees in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks falling around the world as geopolitical risks over Ukraine ripple through global markets, adding to concerns about inflation and the prospect of aggressive Federal Reserve interest rate hikes to tame it. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 38 points this morning. Dow futures down 256. NASDAQ futures down 157. The DAX in Germany is down 3.25%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 1.92%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.52%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.2% or 16 cents at $93.28 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.75% or $14 at $18.56.10 an ounce. The euro, 1.1301 against the dollar. British pound, 1.3511. The yen's at 115.19. And Bitcoin this morning moving lower at $42,160. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. Some airlines have canceled flights to the capital of Ukraine, and troops there have unloaded fresh shipments of weapons from NATO members. The U.S. has been warning of a possible invasion within days by a growing number of Russian forces. Aides to President Volodymyr Zelensky and President Joe Biden say the two leaders spoke for about an hour on the phone yesterday. Russian leader Camilla Valieva has been cleared to compete in the women's figure skating competition at the Beijing Winter Olympics despite failing a pre-games drug test. Super Bowl 56 in the books. Los Angeles Rams, they beat the Cincinnati Bengals 23-20. In the NBA, the Celtics lost. In the NHL, the Devils lost. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It's 6:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. We want to get more now on the situation situation with Ukraine. Julie Norman is with us, lecturer on politics and international relations at University College London. Professor, it's always good to speak with you. Over the last few days, we've been hearing from the U.S. that the window is open for Russia to invade Ukraine pretty much at any time, including during the Olympics. I wonder whether the window is still open or is it closing further on diplomacy to try to head this off?
Well, Nathan, that's certainly the big question this week, and we have heard an escalation of the sense of urgency. And this is in response to a couple of things. First, at the end of last week, Russia began military exercises in Belarus, which essentially placed Russian troops even closer to Kiev and the Ukrainian border, as well as naval exercises in the Black Sea. So the movement of troops has shifted in a kind of a strategic way. Second is intelligence reports from U.S. intelligence about the possibility of a false flag kind of incident to provoke a response. And third is, as you noted, just this sense that the routes to diplomacy do seem to be narrowing. With that said, German Chancellor Scholz will be in Kiev and Moscow this week. European leaders are continuing to meet. Biden, of course, spoke with Putin over the phone on the weekend. So there are still these very strong diplomatic efforts taking place. But at the same time, the situation does seem much more possible right now for an invasion than any time previous.
Yeah, there's been a lot of discussion among Western leaders and President Putin in terms of the security guarantees that Russia's been looking for. It doesn't seem, though, as though this talk has got much of anywhere. Where do you see the possibility that we could see some kind of meeting in the middle in terms of what Russia's looking for from the Western alliance and just heading off the possibility of an invasion here?
Yeah, well, that's certainly the secret. And what Russia obviously wants is a sort of guarantee that Ukraine will not be admitted to NATO anytime soon or really anytime in the future. NATO, of course, does not want to make that kind of guarantee, is doubling down on their open door policy. So the space for negotiations right now would be if there's any wiggle room within that. You know, some voices have said, would it be possible to call for sort of moratorium or a certain time frame that would in which Ukraine would not join NATO. Again, those compromises make sense in some ways from security compromise point of view, but you don't want to be making compromises like that because of a massive troop buildup and setting that as a precedent for making these kinds of compromises. So that's the tension right now. I think there are some potential ways that there could be some compromises, but the situation is just at such a high escalatory point, it's very hard to make those concessions.
Is there a disconnect that you can see between how the U.S. and Europe are confronting Russia here and the reaction that we're hearing from Ukraine? It seems like over the last several days, the message coming out of Ukraine is not to panic and to try to ease tensions.
Well, that's right. And Zelensky in particular has been very focused on this sense of projecting calm, not wanting people to panic. And that's partly just in terms of internal politics and not wanting to whirl the economy even further than it already has been within Ukraine, but also to try and himself de-escalate what he obviously sees as a very tense situation as well. You know, with that said, you know, the U.S. and NATO, I think, are trying to learn some of the lessons from 2014 with Crimea, where they were much more closed in terms of their discourse. They did not, kind of publicize a lot of the intelligence they were having, and they felt Putin took advantage of that. So they're trying to turn the tables this time, get out ahead of Putin, if you will, so that he's on the back foot rather than them responding to what they see as Russian moves. So it's a different kind of tactic for sure. Again, it's one that at least so far has, you know, not led to an invasion yet. But again, I think this week we'll see if this kind of strategy is going to yield some fruits.
Only have about 30 seconds left here, but are you getting any sense that this warning that Russia could face severe sanctions, severe economic penalties, is playing in at all to how Russian President Putin is playing this?
Russia has, of course, downplayed these threats of sanctions, but in reality, this would be quite hard-hitting. Some of the sanctions that are being discussed would quite severely cripple the ruble, would really halt not only exports and trade, but also internal sectors, including defense, including technology that are important to Putin personally. So I do think that is playing into it, but the larger geostrategic and geopolitics questions and kind of this future sense of what the post-Cold War order will look like seem more of what's most driving Putin's moves at the moment.
Thanks to this professor. Always good having you on. Julie Norman, lecturer on politics and international relations at University College London. S&P futures now down 35 points. Dow futures down 240, and NASDAQ futures are lower by 150 points. Just ahead, more on the market sell-off on geopolitical risk and more office workers saying no thanks to going back to the office. Five things you need to know to start the day on Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, sunshine, breezy, cold today, only upper 20s. We'll be in the mid-30s tomorrow. Increasing clouds Wednesday with a high close to 50. Right now, 17 degrees in Central Park.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 3 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Time for the five things you need to know to start your day, brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Interactive Brokers charges margin loan rates from 0.75% to 1.58%. Rates subject to change. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare. Up first, stocks are tumbling as geopolitical risks over Ukraine ripple through global markets. Russia has repeatedly denied intentions to invade Ukraine, but the U.S. is warning a conflict may be imminent. Here's National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan.
Russia wants to continue engaging diplomatically to find a way forward to address their security concerns and our security concerns. We're prepared to do that. If Russia decides instead to take major military action against Ukraine, we're prepared to respond decisively.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan made the comments on Face the Nation from CBS, heard Sundays right here on Bloomberg Radio.
No, we're seeing geopolitical tensions affect the energy markets, Karen. Right now, oil is a touch lower after rising for 8 straight weeks. Some investors predict $100 a barrel. Right now, NYMEX crude's at $92.96, down about 0.2%. Brent is lower by 0.2% as well at $94.26.
Turning to the economy now, Nathan, San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly is weighing in on policy. She says the Fed needs to be measured and data dependent. Current forecasts call for as many as 7 interest rate hikes this year.
Now, as COVID cases ease across the country, back to the office plans are coming back. But it turns out a growing number of white collar workers do not want to return to the office full time. Let's get the details live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. Just 3% of white-collar workers want to return to the office 5 days a week. That's according to a poll by management consultancy Advanced Workplace Associates, which warns employees will quit if companies force them back full-time. 86% of the 10,000 employees polled globally want to work from home at least 2 days a week. People from all age groups and broad ranges of industries felt the same way. And Advanced Workplace Associates manager Director Andrew Mawson says bosses who are not sensitive to their employees' needs will suffer accordingly. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. And the final thing you need to know this morning, the Rams are Super Bowl champions. L.A. beat the Bengals 23-20 last night. Details and reaction coming up shortly in sports. And that's the five things you need to know to start your day, brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Again, futures are falling this morning. NASDAQ futures are down 144 points. That's down 1%. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines and yes, a check of sports. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, 6:33 on Wall Street. We're still at 17 degrees in Central Park. Still dealing with an accident on the southbound Van Wyck affecting your ride to Kennedy Airport. Details coming up in traffic. First, Michael Barr with more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. The busiest U.S.-Canada border crossing has reopened after protests against COVID-19 restrictions closed it for almost a week. The Detroit International Bridge Company said in a statement late last night that the Ambassador Bridge is now fully open. Windsor Police Chief Pamela Mizuno arrested over 24 people yesterday, seized 5 vehicles, and towed 7 more.
What was achieved today, up to this point, is a huge step in the right direction. Officers today made several arrests and were able to seize vehicles of demonstrators in the area.
Meanwhile, the protests in Ottawa has paralyzed downtown. There are mixed messages on masks. Governor Phil Murphy is among state leaders easing indoor mask requirements, despite CDC guidelines to the contrary. The New Jersey governor says his decision impacts schools, and it's based on the drop in COVID cases in his state, not political pressure.
What I am opposed to are other states, I hate to get political, but they're overwhelmingly red states, that have banned masks and then forced districts to sue them to allow them to wear masks. I think that's crazy. We did it, I think, the right way.
Governor Murphy. However, Dr. Darian Sutton, an emergency room physician, supports tougher CDC guidance on masks.
Although the rates are coming down, and I'm grateful for that, we still have approximately 2,500 deaths per day from this virus, and I think we've sadly normalized that.
Dr. Sutton spoke to ABC. Transit officials in New York are hoping a recent uptick in subway ridership is a sign that the city is bouncing back from the Omicron surge. According to subway ridership, topped 3 million for 3 days in a row last week. The MTA says it was the first time that had happened since the Omicron wave hit New York in mid-December. New York Mayor Eric Adams is backing Letitia James for re-election. James, who as state attorney general, has led investigations into former President Donald Trump and former Governor Andrew Cuomo. Social media has been buzzing about the Super Bowl halftime show. Many say it is the best one they've seen. Rapper Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre opened it up. Eminem was part of the show along with Mary J. Blige. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. Almost 6:36 on Wall Street. Let's get more on what bookended that halftime show. Here's John Stanshauer.
Thanks, Nathan. Super Bowl 56. It was a hot day in L.A., and the Rams had a 10-point lead but fell behind, trailed the Bengals for most of the second half, but Matthew Stafford led them on a Super Bowl-winning drive in the fourth quarter. 79 yards, 15 plays, helped by a couple of Bengals penalties, and Stafford's third touchdown pass, the second they went to Cooper Kupp, came with a minute and a half to go. When Aaron Donald and the L.A. defense stopped Cincinnati on a fourth and one, the Rams had the victory 23-20. Kupp was far and away the NFL's top receiver this season. He was the Super Bowl MVP. Not only 8 catches, he had a big run on a fourth and one on that TD drive. His only mistake was he overthrew Stafford on a pass play. But Donald, Von Miller, both had 2 sacks. Stafford wins the title in his first season in L.A. Many years he had languished on bad teams in Detroit.
That last drive was a special drive, one I'll never forget. Just so many great plays by so many great players, and just so happy to get it done. And I'm speechless.
The Bengals had quite a postseason run, but an inability to protect Joe Burrow caught up with them. Burrow sacked 7 times. He got sacked 9 times in a playoff win earlier. NBA, 8th straight win for the Celtics. The NHL, Pittsburgh 3 in the third period to beat the Devils. 4-2 at the Garden. UConn beat St. John 63-60. Red Storm 0-6 against ranked teams. The U.S. won gold and silver in the bobsled. Callie Humphries, Elena Myers-Taylor. Humphries had previously won gold for Canada. Women's hockey semifinals coming up. The U.S. will play Finland. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Thank you, John. 6:37 on Wall Street. Time to take a look at stocks. Some of the names moving in the pre-market. Bloomberg Radio and TV Markets correspondent Kriti Gupta is with us this morning. And Kriti, looking at the broader market, you'd think everything's moving down this morning.
Yeah, it's a pretty risk-off tone. What's interesting is that your typical sectors that you would think would be up, essentially on this kind of Russian risk news, they aren't. So what I'm thinking about here predominantly is going to be those oil companies, because of course we know that geopolitical risk is priced in to the likes of Brent crude, hitting as high as $96 a barrel, Nathan, getting closer to that $100 a barrel stock. Yet, you don't actually see that translate into some of those energy stocks, and that's a global phenomenon. Let me tell you why. Two of the biggest names where you would tend to see that move is going to be BP and Total Energies. These are energy companies in Europe, in particular British Petroleum, and of course French owned Total Energies. So when you do see that geopolitical premium, essentially higher oil prices, well, you would want them, or it would make sense that those higher oil prices would benefit companies in Europe, where that need is most dire. But BP nevertheless actually down in pre-market down 0.9%. It also has a 20% stake in Russia's energy giant Rosneft. So it does have that Russian exposure. So that's going to be something you want to watch. Same story with Total Energies. TTE is the ticker for those ADRs here, down 0.2% this morning. It was down more earlier in the session. That also has a 19% stake in Russian energy giant Novatek. So those are two companies in the energy sector you want to keep a name, keep an eye on, Nathan.
Yeah, interesting to see that Russian exposure for to some of those companies. I mean, when we have this broad sell-off this morning, Creedy, is there anything catching a bid right now?
Very, very few, very slim pickings. You got about three stocks in the green right now. One of them, of course, is Newmont, which is a gold company in particular. So you have that Haven bid translating there, but still not up by a ton. The one big mover that I'm seeing, and when I say big, only up by 0.5%, okay, and that is Lockheed Martin. LMT is your ticker. Now, double whammy here. On the first end, it's a defense stock. So when we're talking about war risk, it kind of makes sense that an American defense company, there's only two, Lockheed Martin and Boeing, would actually rally. And Boeing, you're seeing kind of decline with the broader hit to risk. Lockheed Martin up, like I said, 0.5%, but it also is up because it ended its bid to buy Aerojet Rocketdyne after the FTC sued to block the $4.4 billion deal on the grounds that it would hurt competition among defense contractors. So just the idea that Lockheed is actually saving some money on that deal.
Interesting. Bloomberg Radio and TV Markets correspondent Creedy Gupta keeping an eye on what's happening in the pre-market as we do see this broad sell-off on geopolitical risk this morning. Right now, S&P futures are down 32 points, Dow futures down 218. NASDAQ futures leading the declines on Wall Street this morning. They're down 130 points or 0.9%. Major selling continues in European stocks with Germany's DAX down 3.2% right now. The CAC in Paris is lower by 3.5%. The FTSE in London down 1.9%, and the 10-year Treasury right now up 5/32. The yield 1.91%. An update on Ukraine next with Bloomberg Government's Emily Wilkins. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 11:30 weather: sunshine and breeze today, with a high in the upper 20s. We'll be in the mid 30s tomorrow. Upper 40s, maybe 50 degrees by Wednesday under increasing clouds. Right now, 17 in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and U.S. stock index futures are lower this morning. We go to the First Word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Bill, good morning.
And good morning, Karen. That's right. U.S. futures are under pressure amid added Ukraine tensions. Dow futures currently down 230 points. S&P's dropped 34. NASDAQ futures lower by 142. The U.S. 10-year yield at 1.92%. Gold and oil are both little changed. Bitcoin is higher by 0.8%. And Japan fell 2.2% overnight. While European markets are also under pressure, with most markets down at least 3%. Back in the U.S., nothing to report on the economic front. And in deal news, Lockheed Martin scrapped its bid to buy Aerojet, and the FT reported that Peloton's McCarthy dismissed the idea of a potential sale. In other news, Goldman Sachs cut its S&P 500 forecast on the prospect of aggressive rate hikes. And wrapping things up, Tyson was cut to equal weight over Barclays. J.P. Morgan cut to hold over at Jefferies. Live from the First Republic News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
All right, Bill, thank you. And to hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type Squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. Tensions over Russia's military buildup near Ukraine are entering a potentially decisive week, with the U.S. warning an invasion may be imminent. Russian President Vladimir Putin is accusing America of failing to meet his demands. Meanwhile, President Joe Biden spoke with Ukraine's president yesterday. Russian teenager Kamila Vialeva has been cleared to compete in the women's figure skating competition at the Beijing Winter Olympics, despite failing a pre-games drug test. Super Bowl 56 is in the books. Los Angeles, they beat the Cincinnati Bengals 23-20. The Rams have won their final victory with Matthew Stafford, at least for now anyway. In the NBA, the Celtics lost. In the NHL, the Devils lost. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
what you can learn taking a bus to the Super Bowl. I'm Justin Fox, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. A few days before Sunday's Super Bowl, I traveled via light rail and bus to the host stadium in the Los Angeles suburb of Inglewood. Then I took a bus and a bus rapid transit line that runs down the middle of a freeway to downtown L.A., an underground heavy rail train to Koreatown, an express bus to Westwood, and a bus back to Santa Monica, where I'm currently staying. Yes, you can do all that in Los Angeles, which is not exactly known for its public transportation infrastructure, but has seen smaller drops in transit ridership during the pandemic than other big U.S. cities. That's partly because, unlike in other cities, the white-collar workers who've gone remote over the past 2 years never relied much on public transportation here to begin with. I'm Justin Fox. For more opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And Bloomberg Opinion commentaries can be heard every weekday at this time, and terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. It is 6:50 on Wall Street. We turn to news in science and technology now with the Bloomberg NJIT STEM report. And here's what's making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. Scientists and governments will meet later today to finish a major United Nations report on how global warming disrupts people's lives, their natural environment, and the Earth itself. The United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, a collection of hundreds of the world's top scientists, issues three huge reports on climate change every 5 to 7 years. Rolls-Royce Holdings, the engine maker known for powering Boeing and Airbus workhorse jets, expects a fully electric small aircraft in 3 to 5 years. A top company executive tells us the first commercial application of P-Volt, a battery electric system, will have about 600 kilowatt hours of power, which will enable flying 6 to 8 people as far as 80 nautical miles. And cryptocurrency exchanges were featured amid a Super Bowl ad blitz that cost as much as $7 million for 30 seconds. Coinbase Global had an ad featuring a QR code that viewers had to scan to find out what the spot was about. Those who did were invited to sign up and get $15. FTX Trading, another exchange, ran an ad with comedian Larry David, and Crypto.com spot featured basketball great LeBron James. And that's a Bloomberg NJIT STEM report. Nathan.
Okay, Karen, thank you. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it's almost 6:52 on Wall Street. Time now to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include the crisis over Ukraine. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan says the U.S. is open to diplomacy but prepared to respond if Russia invades.
We have seen over the course of the past 10 days dramatic acceleration in the buildup of Russian forces and the disposition of those forces in such a way that they could launch a military action essentially at any time.
Jake Sullivan was on CBS's Face the Nation. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham says the U.S. should take action against Vladimir Putin now. He was on ABC's This Week.
He's got 100,000 troops amassed on the Ukrainian border, and he's paying no price at all. So I'd like to hit him now for the provocation and have sanctions spelled out very clearly.
Also making news, Democratic Senator Joe Manchin calling on the Fed to tackle inflation head on. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi made a pitch for President Biden's economic agenda on ABC's This Week.
With all the respect in the world for my friend Joe Manchin, it's not right to say that what we are doing is contributing to inflation, because it is exactly the opposite.
You can hear This Week in Face the Nation every Sunday right here on Bloomberg Radio. For more, we're joined by Bloomberg government reporter Emily Wilkins. So, Emily, diplomacy continues even as Russia continues with these massive military drills in Belarus. What's the latest?
So at this point, we are hearing warnings, as I think you just showed from the White House, that Russia could invade Ukraine as soon as this week. The U.S. has told everyone in their embassy in Kiev that to evacuate. Biden and Putin did speak over the weekend. They had about an hour-long call on Saturday where Biden warned Putin that invading Ukraine would cause widespread human suffering, and the West was committed to diplomacy, but equally prepared for other scenarios. Now, there is still some disagreement between the U.S. and Europe about what sanctions would be if Putin was to invade Ukraine. That's in part because different countries have different needs. Germany really does rely to a certain extent on Russia for its energy. Lots of questions around the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. I mean, we just heard Lindsey Graham say that he would want to put sanctions on Putin, and yet legislation that would do that in the Senate has gotten stalled over partisan tensions. And so it's not clear yet when that legislation would pass. Lawmakers were hoping to have it before Putin would do any sort of invasion, but it doesn't look possible that they're going to necessarily get it done this week. And so at this point, everyone's very much on high alert. Biden also spoke with Ukrainian president over the weekend, who invited Biden to come to Ukraine. That's probably not going to happen, but we are going to see continued diplomacy with European leaders. Germany's chancellor is expected to visit both Kiev and Moscow in the upcoming days.
So diplomacy continues, but do we see any sign of a potential off-ramp in these tensions when it seems as though diplomacy, at least up to now, really hasn't gotten very far in terms of getting Russia and the West closer together?
No, and I think that's the question that everyone's really asking right now, Nathan. It's sort of like, what else can the U.S. and can its European allies do at this point? I mean, we have continued to see troop buildup. We've continued to see Russia sort of hold on to its position that, you know, it's not planning on invading and that the U.S. is stroking hysteria. At the same point, there are all these troops that have been on the border for more than a month now. And so at this point, you are seeing the U.S. and European allies continue to talk about diplomatic efforts. But if you look at the actions, there's certainly been a buildup in the warnings that the U.S. has sent and the level of concern. Initially, they were saying that Putin wouldn't attack until after the Olympics. Now the new intelligence is that that's not really the case.
Only about 30 seconds left here, but what do we know about this intelligence that Russia could invade this week? What specifically is the White House saying?
We don't actually know a whole lot about exactly what they're looking at. Obviously, this is, you know, part of the reason the U.S. isn't going to show their full hand here. But Sullivan said that they're putting forward what they know right now about the U.S. and about Ukraine and sending the messages that they are to try to stop a war. Mm-hmm. And they're just showing that for the U.S. intelligence, they do believe this is a threat. This is very real and that this could happen by the end of the week.
And of course, we will continue watching. Bloomberg government reporter Emily Wilkins, thank you, as always, for the update from Washington. Karen.
Nathan, it is 6:56 on Wall Street, and this is Bloomberg Daybreak. February is Black History Month, and every day this month, we are celebrating significant moments in U.S. Black history. Now, with your installment for February 14th, here's Bloomberg's Renita Young.
On this day in Black history in 1867, Morehouse College was founded. Back then, it was called the Augusta Institute, housed in the basement of Springfield Baptist Church in Augusta, Georgia. But then it would move to Atlanta in 1879, go through a couple of name changes, eventually in 1913 becoming Morehouse College. It was honoring Henry Lyman Morehouse, the corresponding secretary of the American Baptist Home Mission. Famous graduates of Morehouse include Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Spike Lee, Samuel L. Jackson, and Herman Cain. That's Today in Black History. I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Radio.
All right, Renita, thank you. And again, futures are selling off this morning. S&P futures down 28 points, Dow futures down 193, NASDAQ futures down 117. They are off their lows of the morning, though. Bloomberg surveillance is straight ahead. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.